Hi, I'm Matthew Kind. Every Monday, look for a fresh new episode where I'll take you behind the scenes and interview the insiders that are shaping the rapidly evolving cannabis industry. Learn more at cannainsider.com. That's C-A-N-N-A insider.com. Now here's your program.
There's been a lot of buzz around grocery dark stores and ghost kitchens, but not a lot of people are talking about the growing number of cannabis dark stores. Here to tell us more is Jeff Sampson, founder and CEO of Everscore. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Sinead.
It's such a pleasure to have you here and so excited to hear all the cool stuff you've got going on over at Everscore. So, Jeff, before we jump into that, can you give us a sense of geography? Where are you joining us from today?
I am in beautiful Boulder, Colorado.
Oh, I'm so envious. I've been there a couple of times, but man, I'm sure it's beautiful this time of year there. Well, Jeff, can you tell us a little bit about the company on a high level, just kind of like a snapshot overview of Everscore?
Sure. It's a model that most people are familiar with. They're just not quite sure how it works. So anybody who's made an order online and had it delivered with a seamless experience, essentially, that's what we're bringing to cannabis. We're what's called a third-party seller marketplace. So we handle everything for the brands, from customer acquisition to the tech stack, the e-commerce site, the order management, the payment solution, and then fulfillment and delivery. And we use partners to be able to get the products down to the local market so that they're close to consumers, and provide an alternative for brands that want to reach more customers. That is in addition to whatever they're doing through existing dispensary footprint.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm really excited to jump into this because this is something that, you know, isn't all that new. We've seen big companies like Walmart and Amazon doing things like this for years now, but this is very new to cannabis. So very, very excited to hear more about what you're doing over at Everscore. But before we dive into that, I kind of want to go backwards here for a sec and talk to you about your background. So, Jeff, you know, tell us a little bit about your introduction to cannabis, what you were doing before Everscore, and why you decided to start this company.
You know, looking back, it all kind of makes sense. But, you know, the origin story goes back to smoking pot with Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters, watching MTV after class. And, you know, like I said, now it all makes sense because he's a musician who loves cannabis and I'm a cannabis guy who loves music. So who'd have known? It all works out. But seriously, I've been in consumer goods and retail pretty much always. So I started off doing leverage buyouts and acquisitions with private equity groups in consumer packaged goods. Once upon a time, I think I did 100% of the cigar deals that were done in the late 90s. And it kind of triggered a love for all things agricultural and the business around them and the people that were involved with them. I went on to go through managing money as a venture capitalist. Again, great timing in the early 2000s. Wound up at Microsoft on the technology side. And since then, it's been all startups and ways that we can use technology to remove the distance between a brand and a consumer, experiential rewards, and multi-sided marketplaces. So how can we use technology to solve for fragmentation? And so when you take all that and you kind of look at cannabis and the problems that cannabis has and the direction that the industry wants to go, it's a great fit. I'm where I'm supposed to be when I'm supposed to be there. So that is not lost on me, and couldn't be happier.
That's awesome. Jeff, I think you might have the coolest introduction to cannabis story I think I've ever heard. That's very, very cool to hear that you have a connection there with Dave Grohl. Well, yeah. So Jeff, tell us a little bit about the fragmentation there that you were kind of touching on and really just the biggest pitfalls of the current dispensary model and where we could see some massive improvement.
So, you know, our observation coming from traditional CPG is that there's massive fragmentation, and the fragmentation is on the grower side, manufacturing, There's fragmentation on the dispensary side. There's fragmentation on the brand side. And so all of these things, it's interesting when we start looking at the kind of the growth projections for the industry, and they're big. We're looking at, I think the general consensus is $100 billion industry, which, just to put us in context, by 2030, that is larger than spirits, larger than wine. And there's only two industries slightly larger than cannabis by 2030, and that is tobacco and beer. So, when you start kind of looking at it in that context, nobody kind of thinks about the impediment to reaching those numbers. And I think the biggest enemy for everybody in the industry right now is fragmentation, because we're talking about being able to scale without any of the infrastructure that is required to meet those projections. So, if you believe that the future of the industry is going to be around brands, then doesn't it make sense that those brands need the same infrastructure as the traditional peers? And so that's where we're coming from. And we're looking at, you named it, if you look at the investments that are being made by, and I'd say, the definition of retailer has changed quite a bit too. But if you look at where people are, these big companies are placing their bets, it's not in physical retail. It's in facilitating a retail experience that uses things like ghost kitchens and dark stores to be able to get the product close to a consumer. And, as Amazon has taught every single one of us, we as consumers, we demand choice, convenience, and confidence. And we know that somebody will deliver that to us. And if they don't, then we'll keep shopping until we find somebody that does. So I don't think cannabis gets a pass here. Once you kind of get past the excitement of the industry, there's just a lot of blocking and tackling that needs to get done to be able to live up to those three simple words: choice, convenience, and confidence. So that's what we're looking to bring to cannabis. And give it 2 years, Sinead, and people will look back and go, "Oh, no big deal. That's the way everybody does it."
I believe you. Yeah.
And they're right. It's true. The only difference is that I think we're at a point in the time in the industry where people are starting to see massive acceptance and trying to find a way to bring this industry more in line with what we would expect from traditional CPG.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Jeff, we've kind of touched on dark stores, and what does that really look like in cannabis right now? And where do you see cannabis dark stores heading over the next few years, over the next 2 years even?
Well, what is encouraging to see is that if you look at the license types and the regulations that are coming out from the states that are approving adult use, the concept of a non-retail storefront is in there for, I believe, somewhere between call it 8 to 10 of the states. So, they've incorporated the concept of a model that looks like its traditional side, where there's a dark store, goes by many names, a micro fulfillment center, like a GoPuff. But essentially what it is it's a small warehouse. And those warehouses can be super efficient in order to get product down close to a consumer and then rely upon delivery for that last mile. And there's lots of companies that do this, and the demand for it, I think, just really speaks volumes. So the fact that the states have identified this opportunity and want to make this business model available, I think it's extremely heartening for us, because what we want to do is we want to provide opportunity. We want to be able to use the technology to let people focus on what they do really, really, really well. So if you're a brand, we want you to be the best brand out there. You shouldn't have to go grow your own. You shouldn't have to run a dispensary on top of it. I mean, we all know why the industry came up the way it did. The restrictions were done at the state level and primarily focused around collection of tax. And now that we've kind of seen, we've been through probably, call it 3 or 4 years of evolution in less than a year because of COVID. And we're kind of starting to see acceleration on all those fronts. So for the most part, all of the regulations which have been coming out support this model. And don't get me wrong, let's say we're on the path to an omni-channel future. Cannabis is a single channel today. It's the retail dispensary. And that's just not the way people buy all of their goods. And so as an industry, if we want to be able to take our place in the mainstream, then we have to provide a mainstream experience. And there will always be those dispensary retail experiences which stand out, whether they, you know, want to have it be fun, whether there's more of a, I think there's lots of models out there that have really kind of appeal to people, whether it's organizing as a looking like a spa, the look and feel, things that people look forward to going into. However, there's a big portion of consumers out there who are either being reintroduced to cannabis or have been curious. And I think when you start looking about how do you get them comfortable in trying these products and getting these brands, I think trying to force them into a singular channel, we're losing a lot of people. And so when we look at introducing this model, and there's lots of, there's delivery today, California's been doing it for years. And that's great, but it's, primarily delivery from dispensaries and delivery from like Caliba. They do a great job through their storage depots. But I think that's what it takes to get new people into the industry. You've got to give them an experience that gives them the choice, convenience, and confidence, but doesn't force them to go and stand in a dispensary where they might be uncomfortable.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Jeff, I've read a stat where in California alone, 488 brands out of the 488, only 5% are in more than 20 dispensaries, which is just mind blowing that so few are making it onto the shelves, and brands that aren't vertically integrated are just at a huge disadvantage. So yeah. So Jeff, you just kind of like tell us a little bit about the benefits there for diversifying the industry. I feel like this is just going to open up the playing field for a lot of really small brands that are trying to make it against some of these Goliath companies. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I couldn't agree with you more, Sinead. You know, a lot of this is one of the things that's so exciting to us is when you remove the self-imposed restrictions that the industry has and really open it up, you'll see things that you never imagined, and whether that is innovative new form factors or products. And but that's where the data becomes really, really valuable today. And I know the stats that you're quoting really well. It's kind of amazing to think that, and I remembered it as being, I think only 5 brands out of the 488 were in more than 25%. So it's actually less. So it's what, 1%?
If I'm doing the math right.
So imagine life for that brand owner. And if there's 700 plus dispensaries in the state of California, how do I get on a shelf if I have to go door to door or try to use services to get onto what is basically left after that dispensary who's own, doing their own private label for what they grow, consumes 80% of the shelf space. And so the disconnect is that we as consumers believe that we're getting choice, but we're not. So that dispensary, if it's close to me, then that's the one that I'm going to rely upon. And as soon as I find out that I can't get what I want from there, I'm already looking for another option. And so, this is a problem which has already been solved. And in a lot of ways, you see this model on Spotify, you see this model in Netflix, you see this model in Instacart and GoPuff. And it's really about being able to provide the broadest choice possible. And nobody ever really considers when I went online and I found what I wanted and I clicked buy, nobody ever really thinks about the effort that it took to make that product show up exactly as promised. And when it does, it kind of sometimes it feels like magic. Otherwise, people really don't care, right? Because of course they did. This is the way it works. The problem is when it doesn't do that, you've now, you know, potentially lost a consumer for life. So what we wanted to do was to be able to bring that model to provide for everybody. And you know, we'll start seeing things that are just completely unseen today. The new micro licenses, the micro business licenses that are out there that allow, you know, a certain amount of homegrown, we can now provide kind of an Etsy model for folks where, you know, people say, well, sometimes, oh, this is going to be like craft liquor or craft, you know, craft brewing. Yeah, it could be. It could be. But for those people that are doing that, they still need a way to get their product in front of consumers. And so this is, you know, this is a case of where, you know, when we talk to brand owners, they, you know, the ones that are familiar with CPG, they talk about points of distribution. They talk about number of doors that they're in, because the biological imperative for a brand is get on the shelf, but also get off the shelf. And that's, so it's difficult on both sides. And so if they only have one option available to them, then the consumers that are expecting that choice are never going to know what they're missing. And the, you know, the model will work until the day that it doesn't. And if there's not another choice there, then we've really, really hurt the industry by not being able to keep up with consumer expectations. And so that's where, you know, you can, the thing that is hard is being able to get in front of a consumer and have that consumer be able to find you. So part, you know, the question is how do brands find consumers? Well, the reverse is true too. How do consumers find these brands? And so that's where, it, you know, opening it up, and we're just another point of distribution. Yes, you know, we have shelf space, but it's an endless shelf because of the technology. It allows us to let small brands compete with the biggest out there through something as simple as some technology, which is used in traditional CPG to meet consumer behavior. And so that's where, you know, to your question, that is where we'll start seeing things open up. We'll start seeing small growers suddenly be the hot brand that nobody ever knew before. A new form factor, things which, I mean, we've heard all the stories. People, brands that we think are fantastic who had been turned down by 40 dispensary operators because in their opinion, people only want to smoke flower. And that could be true for their 20-foot radius around or 20-mile radius around their dispensary. So that's what we're trying to kind of solve for is open up the entire industry, bring new consumers into the industry, and let their behavior dictate what is desirable, as opposed to limiting it to what somebody decided to put on their shelf. And that's the part for us where we're going to see things that we haven't seen before. And you know, the goal here is to use the technology to make the industry more approachable for everybody. Make sense?
It does. Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah. You talked about how brands are really right now, they're kind of working in the dark right now. They don't have the stats in front of them. They don't have the feedback. And I feel like that's something else that you guys are really providing brands right now is just the feedback. And, you know, they're able to look at some concrete numbers and kind of adapt. So can you tell us a little bit about that and the analytics that you provide brands?
This is, I think that this is one of the most exciting parts of it, because as a brand owner, we, you know, we are closest to our products. And so we have a picture in our heads of who that consumer is and how many of them there might be. At the same time, we don't really know. Because without that feedback loop, without being able to say, hey, wow, I thought my product was going to appeal to men age, you know, in their 20s and 30s. And it turns out I was completely wrong. That is the evolution of building a brand. And it requires that feedback to be able to craft that message, to be able to find your audience. So that's where, if you kind of break it down, a lot of this, especially when we're talking about curious consumers, a lot of this comes down to how do you introduce unfamiliar products to familiar routines, right? So how, if I knew that somebody had a certain behavior set, that they, that they were shopping for, that they're shopping either for organic food and they tend to go for the higher priced items, or they have a certain frequency, they work out, basically knowing what's important to them. What do they do when they're not sleeping and not working? Then being able to provide that to a brand. So when they're looking at how do I position my product for somebody who buys these types of products, and I think this would be a really good fit. And so that's where when we know what people are looking for, when we know how to kind of interpret the data to give them an introduction to a product that they've never heard of before, they may have, and certainly not seen it in the media that they consume, then I think we've done our job to be able to provide with the brands with that knowledge around those consumers, and then provide them with a feedback loop. So I'll give you an example. When people come to the site, we have an advertising platform that we brought in-house, built with 40,000 premium lifestyle publishers, the Martha Stewart's, the Food and Wine, Rolling Stone. And so, these are trusted media where knowing who visits them, knowing what we can around their experience from those publishers gives us the ability to introduce brands that we sell on our marketplace in such a way that it increases the conversion rate. So, for the first time they're seeing something, they're having trouble sleeping. They're reading articles around, about sleep. Then we know if there's a brand out there that has a use case that wants to help people have higher quality sleep, then we know that's a match. And we want to be able to position that brand on the marketplace for those people coming with those needs. And so that's where, there's not a lot of that being done today. I think there's been some campaigns, but it's most of it is the advertising industry is difficult at best to understand. It's extremely expensive and it's pretty wasteful. So if we can make that easier, if we can make that less expensive, and we can provide that feedback for a customer and for a brand, then that's a case of where the marketplace has done its job. Our role as a marketplace is to facilitate a connection between a brand and a consumer. And the way that we do it is the way the Amazons, the Walmarts of the world all do it. And so we're excited. I think this is a way to use modeling to start getting past the knowledge gap, the product knowledge gap that exists when people don't know what the strains are. They don't know what an indica is. They don't know what a sativa is, but they do know that they can't sleep. And so we're starting to see more of this needs-based marketing approach, which I think is fantastic, because that's where we can bring in a whole new group of consumers that are looking for, they're not the, they're not the people who've been smoking for 20, 30 years and have their favorite strain and know what their dosing is. And so anything that we can do from a technology side to be able to facilitate, getting new people into the category by decreasing that gap and suggesting the products that best suit their needs, then I think we have a great shot of being able to hit all the growth projections by bringing new people into the category.
Absolutely. That's amazing. I mean, yeah, just the ability for brands to really target their exact audience. And this is something that, in cannabis, like you said, advertising is a bit of a nightmare for a lot of brands, with most of the, you know, go-to channels being totally off limits, like Google, Facebook. So that's massive. And, you know, Jeff, I feel like another huge pain point that you pretty much eliminate at Everscore is for brands that, you know, they're trying to source their ingredients and find good growers, or they're trying to find good manufacturers. A few weeks ago, we had on a guest, Davina Kaonohi of Element Apothic, who it took her an entire year to find a manufacturer that would work with her and meet her standards. So I know you've got a huge network of growers and brands and manufacturers at Everscore. Tell us a little bit about that and the ease there that you guys are offering brands looking for growers and manufacturers.
Yeah, that is, it gets thrown on the very, the top of the very long list of things that are really, really hard for brands. And we just felt like if we could facilitate the connection between a brand and a consumer, then we should be able to facilitate a connection between a brand and a grower too. And so that kind of was the idea for us to kick off what is Native American Cannabis Alliance, which what we've done is really kind of trying to flip the industry from a push, meaning somebody grows it, pushes it to a manufacturer who pushes it to distribution, who then pushes it to a consumer. We think the right way to do it is to do it from a pull perspective. So create the demand from the consumer and have that pull through everything to them, in which case it gets a lot easier, which means we should scale faster. So from that, brand perspective, if customer acquisition is the number one problem in being able to satisfy that brand's very basic desire to get on a shelf and get off a shelf, then I think the second biggest thing is, most brand owners see the opportunity to be a national brand, or as close to national as we can get, pre-legalization. But you're right. The level of difficulty that it requires to do that. I mean, there's licensing deals. There's, you're forced to choose from a list of bad decisions. there's just no good decision in there, and risk. And I think a lot of this can be viewed through risk. This is my brand. I put everything into this brand, but when I go to this state, I lose control of my brand, which means now everything I built requires somebody else to love my brand and treat it with the same respect and honor that I do. And that's tough. Sometimes, again, it comes down to risk. A lot of times it's okay. But when it's not, sometimes the brands take a huge hit. And so what we wanted to do was to be able to identify a source of cultivation that had capacity to grow. And we've had a wonderful response from the indigenous farmers and collectives in many, many, many states that are looking for ways to play into the market. And, the piece that I think has been needed to be able to connect that opportunity for those people to grow and to be able to reach brands on the marketplace was the concept of a campus, a singular manufacturing, extraction, processing campus. And so we'll be announcing probably within the next 30 days or so. We're documenting that right now, but we have a campus for Oklahoma, two campuses in California, and one in Massachusetts, where now if you're a brand who's selling on our marketplace in California and you want to sell in other states where Everscore is operating, then we can facilitate everything that they would need. And so this goes back to where we started, right? So we've talked about dark stores. This is ghost kitchens. And this is, this is the model, again, that's familiar on the traditional side. And, in cannabis, it's contract manufacturing, but it's contract manufacturing at scale and standards. So my favorite example of this is Mr. Beast on YouTube. This is a guy who's got 50 million followers on YouTube, and you know, he's a young guy. He does some amazing things. But he, you know, he's critiques burgers. And so he partnered up with Virtual Dining Concepts. And it's a company that has, I think they started off with 300 contract kitchens across the United States. So Mr. Beast came up with a very limited menu, just a handful of things, maybe five things. And those that menu was manufactured starting in 300 kitchens across the United States. There was no single location that anybody could walk into and order a Mr. Beast burger. But there was an app and there was online ordering. You could go and you can order it, and DoorDash would deliver it to you in 30 minutes or less. And he sold 1 million burgers in 2 months. So that's, you know, that's a model that we look at and say, of course, this will work in cannabis. But it does require orchestration. And, you know, this is, you know, I think the models are all there. You know, the opportunity to collaborate is it's there for everybody. And and by the way, the definition of opportunity should not be dictated by the size of your balance sheet. And that's why I think this model works here, because for those brands that want to go into those states, then we can facilitate everything that they need, from access to high quality cultivation to a manufacturing facility, which will take their SOPs and their recipes and manufacture to them. It'll go from that manufacturing campus to our dark stores or micro fulfillment centers, and we make a market for it online. And so they've, you know, the value prop to these brands is it's, you know, more customers, more shelf, more margin. They get to control how their brand is viewed, manufactured in every single market that they go into. They never, you know, we're trying to take the risk out of that decision so that they get the broadest number of consumers possible with the lowest amount of risk.
Jeff, I love that example you gave about Mr. Beast and the Mr. Beast burgers. I love that, just that entire saga. And it's just really a fascinating story. Have you had a chance to try one of his burgers yet?
I haven't. When last time I went on, they did not have something in Tiny Boulder. They had one down in Denver. So he's on my list.
That's amazing. Well, this is just very exciting. I feel like for brands that, like you said, don't have the capital to start over an entire new operation in every state that they try to expand to, this is just so massive and just eliminating so many different problems for brands out there. So yeah, so Jeff, you know, you mentioned you've got facilities in 3 states right now. Are you planning to expand across the U.S. anymore over the next few years?
Oh, yes. For us, I think, you know, we're watching pretty carefully on some of the new states that have opened up. And you know, I guess we're interested in being able to provide the biggest footprint for our brands as possible. And so we've started operations in New York, but I think that's kind of been moved to the back burner since they've delayed by at least a year. And we're watching, you know, some of the recently the states where adult use was approved. And as long as there are delivery licenses and non-retail storefronts and social equity, that's for us, that is, you know, that's kind of the 3 things that we're looking for in a market for us to enter it. And so far I'd say that the states are all see the opportunity. I think, you know, the thing with the social equity is it's a great way to level the playing field to a point. And you know, it solves access, but it doesn't solve for the fragmentation. And so, you know, these are markets where, you know, like I said, opportunity shouldn't be dictated by a balance sheet. These entrepreneurs who are able to qualify under the social equity requirements and get a license, they're not in business yet. And so what we want to do is we want to be able to look at a platform for them to partner with us and preserve. They want to be a delivery business. Go be the best delivery business you can be. We'll solve the rest of it. We'll solve the customer acquisition, the brand, everything, and we'll give you, you know, we'll give you the ability to focus on what you wanted to be when you got into the business. And so that's where, you know, I'd say the states are doing a great job of looking at those regulations, what's worked in the past and what hasn't, and being able to provide at least the regulatory framework for these new models to proliferate. So we're there. We'd love to be everywhere it makes sense for us to be.
Oh, that's great. Well, yeah, lots of exciting things ahead for Everscore, and just super pumped for you guys. Really excited to see what you do over the next few years. For those of our listeners who want to get in touch with you, Jeff, what's the best way that they can contact you?
Email is jeff@everscore.ai. And we've got our brand facing site is everscoreconnect.com. The everscore.com is the marketplace. And we're in user acceptance testing right now, which is a fancy technical way of saying we're making sure it doesn't break. and then we'll release it hopefully here before the holidays.
Oh, great. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'll include the links and everything in the show notes for the show. So if you're interested, definitely go check that out. But Jeff, before we wrap up here, I'd love to turn to some fun personal development questions. These are just a few kind of get to know you questions that, give listeners an idea of who you are outside of Everscore. So first question, Jeff, are there any books that have had a big impact on your life or way of thinking that you could share with us?
Oh, wow. I still read 5 to 6 books a month, and it's across, it's across everything. I am wearing my Kindle to death. But, when I was a kid, my mom would tell you that I read two types of books. They were comic books and how-to books, which makes total sense now because there's part of my brain that loves the creativity of imagining new things, but the very practical side wants to know, okay, wait, now how does that work? How would you do that? that comes in very helpful for what we do now. What I would say is, one of my personal heroes was Stan Lee, the founder of Marvel. And so, when I was a kid, I just knew that I loved Marvel comics, but now I know why I love them. And most of it was because Stan would imagine whole, not just companies and not just books, he would imagine whole new universes. And to me, that was such a much bigger, more noble pursuit. So I'm a huge Marvel fan, and I've read just about everything there is to read about him. And I can tell you that the world is a less exciting place without Stan Lee in it. But that's where I came from. These days, I read everything, Sinead. So other than Stan Lee, I'd say that he probably deserves most of my love and admiration for that question.
Oh, that's a great answer. I love it. Yeah, we don't get a lot of responses like that. It's usually, like you said, kind of more entrepreneurial type books, but I'm sure you read a good bit of those too, but I love that response.
It's all, it's the creativity. And for anybody out there that's ever been in that spot, I'll tell you, who else, since we started with Dave Grohl, we can end with Dave too. As cool as Dave is, he is not the coolest Grohl. The coolest Grohl would be his mom, Ginny. So Ginny was my English teacher. And, so everything that you see in Dave, a lot of it came from Ginny. And one of the things that I loved, which I'm forever grateful for, as a teacher, especially for a student like me, I think the notes on my report cards was saying difficult was the term which kept coming up. But Ginny was never judgmental. And so she was always that person who would say, tell me more about that, when you were expected to be shut down or told to go stand in the corner. And so, she was one of those people that could pull that creativity out of folks that would, if Stan Lee could create universes, it was only because there was somebody like Ginny Grohl who was there to kind of get him to think about it and tell him it was okay to think about it and then coax it out of his head. So you know, those are special people for sure. And I look for that in folks now too, and hopefully I can provide that for others because it's meant a world to me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You and I had talked about this prior, Jeff, but I feel like, you know, Dave Grohl, he's such a class act of a rock star. I feel like you don't see that every day. And judging by what you've told me about his mom, that's no coincidence since he's gotten that from her parenting for sure. So that's really very, very cool to hear kind of the, you know, the backstory there about him and your experience with his mom. I had a very similar experience with school. I feel like I didn't love school, but I certainly loved a few very influential teachers. So definitely relate to you there.
Yeah. What a surprise. People are not built the same way, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Shocker, you know? Well, Jeff, that actually leads me into my second question for you. And I'm curious what your response is going to be after we've talked about Dave Grohl so much here. But if you were to end this interview and go turn on some music, what would you listen to right now?
Oh, it's already queued up. It's got to be Everlong by the Foo Fighters.
I love it. Are you also a big Nirvana fan?
I am, but I, you know, there was a moment when, for anybody who's a big music fan, when Kurt Cobain died, there's a story that came out in Rolling Stone that talked about Dave as a musician. And I was so proud because the first album he produced, literally, I mean, he did everything on that album by himself.
Wow.
So it's awesome to see. And it's, look, regardless of whether you're building a band, a cannabis business, a media empire, whatever it is, the skill sets are pretty similar.
Absolutely. Well, that is such a great message to leave this on, Jeff. Thank you so much for this amazing conversation. I feel like we've covered so many different topics today, from the Foo Fighters to Cannabis Dark Stores and all the good stuff you're doing over at Everscore. But thank you so much, Jeff, and just wish you all the best for the next few years. I know you guys have some big things in the works.
Oh, Sinead, you know, I really appreciate it. You know, the chance to tell our story and all of the energy that you've given us, and stay tuned. There's more to come.
If you enjoyed the show today, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever app you might be using to listen to the show. Every 5-star review helps us to bring the best guest to you. Learn more at cannainsider.com/iTunes. What are the 5 disruptive trends that will impact the cannabis industry in the next 5 years? Find out with your free report at cannainsider.com/trends. Have a suggestion for an awesome guest on Canna Insider? Simply send us an email at feedback@cannainsider.com. We'd love to hear from you. Please do not take any information from Canna Insider or its guests as medical advice. Contact your licensed physician before taking cannabis or using it for medical treatments. Promotional consideration may be provided by select guests, advertisers, or companies featured in Canna Insider. Lastly, the host or guests on Canna Insider may or may not invest in the companies or entrepreneurs profiled on the show. Please consult your licensed financial advisor before making any investment decisions. Final disclosure to see if you're still paying attention. This little whistle jingle you're listening to will get stuck in your head for the rest of the day. Thanks for listening, and look for another Canna Insider episode soon. Take care. Bye-bye.